For April 7th, 2017, we talk about The Legend of Zelda: The Breath of the Wild, Atlas's oppressive streaming rules, and we ask you about game themes and mechanics. That's appropriately vague. Welcome to Level 191. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Whew, this is a busy time. If you're listening to this and you're in the northern Midwest area, rush to Milwaukee because we're going to be there for the Midwest Gaming Classic. And by we, I mean me and Gary, sorry. Jenny's going to be there, I believe. Jenny, frequent guest on shows. But yeah,
that's actually her last name. It's a lot of hype.
Yeah. Frequent guest on shows. I think it's a Scandinavian kind of thing. No, it's so jumping right into Banner. Been going crazy getting ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you guys are going to do a live show.
Yeah. We're doing a live watch out for Fireballs on Pilot Wings. The entire series actually, on Sunday afternoon.
Woo.
Yeah, and we're meeting up at a place, at a bar on Saturday night. I need to get the actual details for that.
Places are good.
Yeah,
put them in the show notes.
Yeah, we're gonna be there. That's it. Yeah, but we're gonna meet at a place as opposed to just a concept. Yeah.
Yeah. We're always meeting in concept. That's our secret.
Yep. Yeah. No, but that is that is my initial banter. I also, in the depths of going crazy, said fuck it, and I saw two movies over the weekend.
Yay! Right. What'd you see?
I went and saw Get Out on Saturday, and I saw Logan on Sunday.
Cool.
Yes, and they were both excellent.
Yay!
Yeah.
That's so is it a fitting finale for that version of Werewolf? Wolverine. Good
Werewolf.
Lord.
His name Werewolf and his stalwart sidekick Left Eye.
At least I caught myself.
Spoiler alert. Yep.
I was so busy trying to think of the actor's name. Yep. I said the character name wrong.
Yep. Chancellor Z. His long-haired buddy in the, I think he's on a walker or something like that.
Yeah. So I apologize. Was it a fitting retirement for Channing Tatum as Wolverine?
Yes. So it perfectly encapsulated his transformation from Wolverine into Gambit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was very good. It was unexpected. I didn't expect it to get me like it did, but yeah, it's very well done. Plenty of people have said a lot of stuff about it. I'm really, really late to the party, but it gets a hearty thumbs up.
Nice.
That's okay. I'm way late to the party. Like, I probably won't see it until 2 or 3 years from now when somebody finally wrangles me and says, "You haven't seen Logan," and then I'm like, "Bring it over, bitch!" And then we watch it. So
aggressive.
Yeah, I am aggressive and hateful, just like my bird.
Yeah, you shared a video of your bird kind of gnawing at your finger.
Yeah. She's moody. she's very moody. And then right after that, she was just chilling out with my mom on the couch, like, what's up? Reading a magazine, and the bird was, like, literally looking at the magazine, you know?
I have a new friend now. Screw you.
Yeah, basically.
So. Does the bird version of the door closing at the end of Godfather? Yeah. Oh, so how about other people? I feel like I came in hot with my own banter and monopolized things. Dennis, how about you? What have you been doing over the past week?
I'm doing good. I went camping this weekend.
Oh yeah,
which is fun.
Yeah, you went camping along with the rest of my entire office.
Yeah. So it's a church event, and the church that I go to in Cincinnati is pretty big. So it was 700 couples, 1,400 people, on this weekend camping trip. Fun fact, though, so they do you know, like a man camp, a woman camp, and then this is the first time they've ever done like a couples camp. And they, you know, basically what you always do for part of it is just like clear brush from the land, because they bought land and they've kind of making it nicer. But the 1,400 couples, or the 700 couples, cleared more land in the same amount of time than 2,000 men at man camp.
Hmm.
And the working theory for why that is at man camp, you know, they say, all right, we're focusing on clearing honeysuckle. If it's smaller than two inches, fine, rip it out. But if it's bigger, leave it. And of course, at man camp, I'm sure everyone goes like, ah, screw it. I'm finding the biggest tree I can. I'm taking it down with a handsaw. And so they don't get that far. And so with the couples, I think we were able to stay a little bit more focused and got some real work. So that felt good. But yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah.
Lots of campfire drinking, which is what you do for
That's camping. So
yeah, it's good times.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. Jala, how about you?
The only thing, well, I guess I could say I did another mud run this last weekend, and then this next weekend I have a trail race, a 25K trail race, and in between all of that, I had a completely random thought. Prompto from Final Fantasy 15. His name is Quicksilver. I haven't played it, but I came across something that listed his last name, which is Argentum.
Okay. Prompt.
And Argentum is silver, you know?
Yeah.
So Quick Prompt. Quick Silver. Get it?
Yeah. I
was like,
yeah.
Okay. So anyway, that was a random thought that I had. And in between races and things, this is where my brain goes. The end. That's it.
Insight. Yeah. Yeah. I have that. I played the first hour of it. It was neat, but then I moved on to other stuff. I forget which one Prompto is. Is he the
blonde
dude who wears leather with light hair? Yeah.
The blonde guy with the gun and the little vest thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to get to know those characters, by which I mean distinguish between them whatsoever.
I think it is the only reason anything about the characters at all is because I happen to follow a few, very few random cosplayers, and one of them does like Noctis, Ignis, and Prompto.
Okay.
And his girlfriend, I think is his girlfriend anyway, does like, you know, whatever the chick's name is.
Sydney.
Okay, there you go. And so anyway, like, between the two of them, I end up seeing all these, you know, Final Fantasy 15 cosplay pictures. And he didn't post a thing that said the last name. I don't know where I saw the last name. But anyway.
I don't know why you have trouble telling them apart. One looks like a band member from Fall Out Boy, and the other looks like a band member from My Chemical Romance. It's easy.
Yeah, basically. So I was actually reflecting on the fashion styles of the various Final Fantasies and how they change over time. Not that anybody else really is interested about that on this particular show, but that's okay.
I mean, there's a definite shift in tone when Amano's designs gave way to what's his name, Jimmy Kingdom Hearts. Yeah, I honestly forget his name, and I don't feel like Googling to look it up. But yeah, with Seven and that new designer stepping forward, you know, the fashion has really evolved. You know, or by not by evolved, I don't mean it got better, but just shifted and got a little bit
team
more
evolved.
Yeah, just changed.
By evolved, I mean devolved.
Altered.
Well, and then they had like actual Final Fantasy characters, you know, being models for real life designer, fashion designers too. So like, okay. Yeah, it's very fashion. Final fashion? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not very exciting. Final fashion.
Ben, how about you?
The only thing I got is so the Rick and Morty premiered over the week, so I was really happy about that. Did any of you guys catch that?
No, I didn't. I saw a lot of people talking about it, but I was too involved to take the time to watch it. Did they stream it or?
Yeah, so they premiered it on April Fool's Day as just kind of like a joke, I guess, so that if people got really excited about it, everyone would think it was a joke and then maybe not watch it. I don't know, but yeah, it was pretty great. I also got to know my board game stores in the city really well. One of my coworkers, his family went out of town, so we did like 12 hours at a board game store playing two different board games and then Magic. So that was pretty intense. So
nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
Yeah. So how much money have you sunk into Magic at this point? Because you've been playing for what, like a month?
Yeah, so I've only done three drafts through work, so I think $28. So
okay.
It's not
You have spent more on Magic in 1 month than I have on Hearthstone in 2.5 to 3 years.
Dang. So.
Well, I mean, Hearthstone doesn't require you to go to a physical place and, you know, buy it, you know, play with a physical thing.
You've also interacted with humans, so I guess you have that on me.
So here's the thing. I almost said go to a place with people, but that kind of would have been like a little bit of a burn, and I don't want to be that person. Yeah. Huh. Well, it sounds like we've all had pretty full weeks, and we've got a full episode here coming up too. We've got the usual thing for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis, if I don't throw to you first, I'm pretty sure your head's going to explode. So yes. tell me what's happening on the PS4.
And I saw the first tweet on this like April 2nd. So I was so excited and then really worried and then so excited again. But Jak and Daxter is coming to PS4, the entire collections, which means Jak and Daxter, Jak 2, Jak 3. And yes, Jak X, the kart racing spinoff game, which makes me so happy. I'm going to spend all my time talking about Jak X, I guess, because that game is kind of underappreciated, in part because it's not available in any other format. Like, to this day, if you want to play it, you have to go find a PS2 and a copy of it. But you know, with this purchase, you should be able to now play it on PS4. That's the first time you'll be able to get it anywhere other than the original system.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun. All these games are great and have a very special place in my heart. Just cause it, you know, they hit at the right point in my childhood. They're all getting up-res to 1080p, and in general get kind of a coat of finish on them. No price announced yet, but usually PS2 classics go around like $9.99 or $14.99.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're $15 a piece.
Yeah, so that would be well worth it. That's $60 that's just going to fly out of my pocket.
Yeah, so I mean, it cannot be overstated how much you like this series. Like, you used to like participate in message boards and stuff.
I wrote fan fiction.
Yeah, I also didn't want to leave with that because it might have come across as a burn. I didn't want to put you on blast. But this was your big platformer, right?
Yeah, the Jak and Daxter message board on IGN was actually the first like significant internet message board that I was a part of.
Yeah.
So that also probably endeared it to me. it'll be really interesting going back through. And kind of re-evolving with the games. Because I'm, you know, each game is great in its own right, but they definitely evolved and got better with each entry in the series. So going back to the very first game will kind of be a step backwards, not just in time, but I don't want to say in quality, in finish.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's not too jarring.
Or just like in structure too, right? Because like Jak 2 is explicitly like an open world, like GTA kind of thing.
Yeah, it's Grand Theft Kiddo. Like, it's a safe Grand Theft Auto.
I think you're describing kidnapping.
Yeah, I guess so.
Grand Theft Champ Sport.
Yeah. Grand Theft Emo. Yeah. To continue the theme.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, the Jak 2 is all about the broody angry man.
Yeah.
So it's coming. What's the date on this? I don't see a date in the article. Hopefully soon. The sooner the better.
Yeah. Well, it's just good to see them actually committing to expanding the PS2 classics on the PS4. Those that is a worthwhile thing, and I would probably be saying that even if I didn't do a retro games podcast that often benefited from that.
Yeah. So it's quote later this year.
Okay.
Quote.
Yeah. So probably
just scrolling back through like images that are in these you know, news posts and seeing the screenshots of different levels that I haven't thought about in forever is just getting me excited. So
yeah,
should be good.
I will have you know, Dennis, that I don't watch a lot of streams very often. I only really watch them if there are people that I know playing a thing that I'm very interested in watching. But I watched George playing Jak and Daxter because I've never played it. And so I was watching him play because he was going through. He covered it. He and Greg covered it on PlayStation Power pretty recently. So,
very cool. I'll be curious to see. So they right before the release of Jack X, they sent around, and I don't know how I got on the mailing list for it, but they sent around a Jack and Daxter movie in like heavy, heavy quotes, which essentially like compiled the main cutscenes from the previous three games with some narration from Daxter to like tell the story leading up to Jack X. I would be interested to see if that's like a little bonus included. It's floating around my house somewhere.
Oh, that's that's super weird. Jack X is the finale of the series.
Yeah, basically.
Huh. Weird.
So I'm still waiting for the Uncharted kart racer. Really, really.
They couldn't have teased that in EGM. Maybe they did.
It was probably an April Fool's Day thing.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Well, that's cool. I'm happy for you. I'm happy you're gonna those games are gonna be accessible. Was that ever released as a PS3 like HD remake set, or am I thinking of Ratchet and Clank?
Jack and Daxter main series was released as a collection. I know in hard copy, probably online as well. But I don't think Jack X never quite made it back to that point.
Cool. Jal, you've got a weird story, and I'm curious about this.
There's a dude who is a Dark Souls fan, but he's also a guy who plays games with alternate controllers. So he beat Dark Souls 3 with a controller made out of bananas. Bananas! I'm not fucking joking! There is a video, like, this guy is on Twitch, okay? You can look him up. He is the Super Scrubs. You can watch the full video with sound. There is a camera showing he's got wires attached to bananas, and he basically touches different bananas to activate different buttons, and they're all laid out on the table. And you can watch him playing the game. And so it's really kind of crazy. He also beat Dark Souls 3 with a steering wheel and a dance pad. He's also done Bongo Souls using the Donkey Kong, Konga.
This is
stuff.
That dude. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And he's played games with a large candy cane, an IRL sonic amplifier, a hairdryer, an Ouija board, dumbbells, a zapper gun, and Overwatch. He played Reinhardt with inflatable hammer and shield. So I mean, like, he's worth looking at. An alternate handle of his on some other website is a twerking Yoshi, and that just made me laugh way too much. So
yeah,
that's about it. Like, you really need to see this to understand. I don't even know that I understand, but I mean, like, really fully grasp what's going on and how nuts this is, or bananas it is, rather.
I wish you hadn't.
This shit is bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
DarkSouls.
Yeah. where do you go from here, though? What, like,
yeah,
where comes after you go banana? Like,
That's what I said when I saw somebody beat Ornstein and Smough with a Rock Band controller, like with a guitar. You know, might have been this dude. I don't know.
I get using controllers for this. Like, okay, the controller exists for something else, but at this point, you're just inventing a controller. Like, I can build my own controller out of anything, really.
Yeah.
So where, like, Rock Band, I get. It's a controller that exists, so you're going to use that.
Yeah.
It's
something that already plugs into a machine.
Exactly. Build a controller, there's no boundaries.
Yeah.
Like, everything is on the table, and that's what's intrigued me.
You should do a voice-activated controller.
I think somebody did that.
Yeah, I think someone did that.
Yeah.
My gosh.
So anyway, there were some other random stories I could have done, but this one was just kind of so bonkers. I was like, okay, yeah, I just need to share this. So
yeah,
Super Scrubs on Twitch and go look at this man play this game with bananas.
Yeah, see, what's funny is, like, the video of him playing the, you know, like, beating these bosses with the bananas, whatever, that's pretty cool. The thing that I want to see videos of is him actually doing the build.
Oh yeah,
yeah, like explaining the way that it's put together, like either in time lapse, just basically give me like a Mythbusters build video with him, just like showing how this works and what it is. That is more interesting to me than just like, okay, here's him executing it.
It looks like it might be something like Pulse. Like if a banana jiggles or whatever, then it'll just send a command into the controller.
Just let that softball sail right by.
Yep. Dennis, we're not doing phrasing anymore. This is cool. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, Jola. Ben, I'm curious about Zelda.
Yeah, so there's a cool article that talked about how you can currently play Zelda Breath of the Wild on PC. And you can play it in 4K resolution if you have a computer that is fast enough. I was very surprised by this. I thought that that would be kind of on lockdown. I didn't know that you could emulate games that quickly. The emulator is called CEMU. I don't know if that's pronounced like CEMU or anything, but the one person posted the specs of his computer that he was using to run this. It looks really cool, but it also brings up the question, is that okay or not? Like, even if you buy a copy of the game, it definitely feels kind of weird/wrong maybe to be emulating that game on the PC, since Nintendo's kind of using this as a flagship so that people buy Switches. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What do you guys think about it?
I have no idea. I would need to see exactly how stable this is, because as far as I know, most of the super recent emulation is kind of janky. Like, this will run at 4K. It just means we have been able to like dump a frame or some frames onto a screen, right? The big exception to that, I think, has been Dolphin, the Wii emulator that everybody was using to run Wii and GameCube games at 1080p. And that's how you got some like really impressive shots of Mario Galaxy and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, this is bad. Like, I believe it's bad. I don't turn my nose up at emulation. In fact, I do it quite a bit to play some of the weird, old, odd stuff for, Abject Suffering, things like that. But if a game is, if you can go to a store and buy the actual game, the case gets a little bit less compelling.
Yeah. And that's the camp that I'm in too, because I was thinking about getting a Switch because I got some money from my health insurance for being super fit. And I ended up deciding to put it back into getting a home gym instead of getting a Switch. So just because I have a Vita and I need to play all the games I have on my backlog there rather than creating a new backlog elsewhere. But I would not emulate Breath of the Wild because I can go buy a Switch, and that's what I should be doing to, let the developers know that I really like the game and the system and the whatever. And, I wouldn't emulate a current title. If it's out of print, then that's a different story.
Yeah. So what if you already own a copy and you just kind of, for a, the practice of, coding, whatever you do to make it work, like,
well, they already got the money, so, That's fine in my book if you've already got a copy of it and you're just, for whatever reason, feeling you need to play it again somewhere else. I mean, more power to you. Go for it.
Yeah. As a technological curiosity, like, I don't know, it's kind of cool that somebody is doing it. The problem becomes if this then is turned around and distributed. You know, like, hey, we cracked it. Here you go.
Yeah.
You know, I take a similarly dim view.
Which it's the internet, so it will be.
It exists, and therefore it will never not exist now, right? People know about it and all that. I think that's just a bummer. We've seen piracy kill other systems and stuff like that. I would rather them not distribute that, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Ben, you're the one who put the question forward. Do you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I was just surprised that emulation had gotten this quick or this good this quickly.
I mean, everything is a glorified PC at this point, right?
Yeah,
I almost think it would be getting easier.
I don't know what the internals on a Switch are.
Mm-hmm. No, I have no idea.
Yeah, because like I know the PS4 made the Switch over to an x86 processor. The Xbox One is on an x86 as well, moving from the Xbox 360 Power PC kind of internals. So yeah, I mean, x86 is the kind of processor that like is in your laptop, that like Intel makes. Like, it's just a desktop style thing. I wouldn't be surprised if this is, but I think that even the Wii U was was PowerPC. I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass. So I don't know.
Sounded good.
Somebody is banging their steering wheel somewhere.
I mean, always, because I spoke.
Yeah. yep.
Yeah. I don't know.
It definitely makes me want to play Zelda, but not necessarily through him. Not through.
Have you found someone to mooch off of yet?
Not yet. Like a chump. I'm still playing Event Horizon Zero Dawn 360.
Yeah. I would play the shit out of an Event Horizon game. In fact, it just did. It was called Dead Space.
The thing that made me want to go play Zelda is Tim or Frothyham, his commentary from the other week about going exploring and adventuring and it's scary out there. And now I'm like, exploration, I need to go do the thing.
It's so good. I'll talk about it more in the grind, but it's so good.
Yay.
Yeah. Is that all we have to say about that? Because I've got mine here.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think Persona 4 came out today as we're recording. That's what my calendar says. Persona 5. Persona 5 came. And, you know, hey, it's new to me. No, it's not. I played Persona 4 quite a bit. Persona 5 came out today, and Atlas has been really, really heavy-handed about saying what people can and cannot stream and what people can or cannot share. The first part of the story that I saw before was that they had disabled the PlayStation 4 share button. You know, the button that you would press to say, hey, you know, let me go in and grab some video of what I just saw, or let me take a screenshot with this. Like, it's a pretty cool feature on the PS4, but they don't want people to be able to do that because they desperately don't want any kind of spoilers happening there. Mm-hmm. And then here today, along with the release of the actual game, they've come out and kind of issued almost a press embargo style like guideline kind of thing, talking about video content and streaming content, going so far as to say that if you stream stuff from beyond a certain calendar date in the game, you know, because it's like a day night cycle kind of thing, it takes place over the course of a year, I think, you may end up getting slapped with content ID or maybe get a strike against your channel. So if Atlas finds out that, you know, that you're breaking their rules, they're going to come in and basically use the rules of the platform against you, whatever you're using. And they also have like limitations on the length that you can stream something, or the length that you length of video you can post. They don't have a limitation on streaming, but they don't want any videos, stuff on video on demand, to focus on things related to the cutscenes. They just want they want people to show exploring Tokyo or doing the dungeon. Like, that's it. This is just, it's very heavy-handed, and it shows an almost Nintendo-like ignorance of the role that streaming can play in getting people excited about their shit.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's not just because that's not how the world works, dog, but also because I think that this kind of warning will make people less likely to tag videos that they do put up as like, hey, spoiler content. Mm-hmm. And so I see this almost creating the problem worse than they were originally worried about, because if someone's going to put up video about this stuff, they're not going to advertise that, hey, this has spoilers, and it'll be more likely that someone could wander into stuff they don't want to see.
They're saying that this is about spoilers, but it's absolutely not, because if somebody's worried about spoilers, they're not going to be watching a stream. You know, they're not going to be watching a video of gameplay. So it feels a little bit disingenuous of them to say, like, hey, we're trying to protect people's experience, when in reality what this seems like is trying to get in front of people who may be interested in buying the game or can't buy the game because of system availability, and are watching the story content online through these other things, you know, getting the vicarious playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things
how that works.
Where people are going to act how you expect them to react. So if you tell a bunch of people like not to do this, then people are going to just be like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to do this now out of spite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard somewhere this is a thing I could do. Bleep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know.
Bump, bump.
Any other thoughts on this? I think this is crazy.
Yeah. It's like, Get with the times, dude. Streaming, it's a thing that happens these days, you know?
I wonder if they'll actually follow through on this with anyone. Like, that's I think this becomes a story. And if they actually try to punish someone for doing it, then I'll be impressed.
Yeah, and they'd have to punish somebody who actually has a high profile.
Right.
Yeah.
That concept just seems so ridiculous, to punish someone for buying and playing your game.
And advertising your game. Yeah.
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 Wow.
I don't know.
Okay.
Huh. Well, that sounds like a brief to me.
Mm-hmm. It was brief.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Let me look at who posted this. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked him kind of about something that's very indigenous to video games, which is the gameplay, the interactivity supporting the themes or ideas that the story of the game is trying to tell. So this week we're talking about what games have the best connection between gameplay and theme.
What's the picture from?
That is Catherine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I haven't played it.
Yeah, it's a good game.
I haven't either. Persona. I've just heard it's good for the thing I was asking about, so.
So I'll start us here with Greg, who says, this is a really hard question, if I had more time, I'm sure I'd think of more games. Off of the top of my head are more modern games due to their detailed and colorful graphics and immersive sound effects. The 3D Fallout games, BioShock, and Left 4 Dead games come right to mind, although he doesn't mention what the themes they support are.
Mm-hmm. Half credit, that. Greg.
Left 4 Dead supports the theme of, oh my god, zombies, so many.
I think Fallout does a pretty good job of, you know, just showing how shitty the world is and making you a scavenger, you know.
Well, isn't that kind of BioShock too? It's supposed to show you that kind of a thing, so yeah.
Show you the crappy city and its weird flawed ideology.
The mm-hmm. Fallout VAT system is a glorified metaphor for how everyone is sucked into their phone screens and just, you know, pausing the world all the time. So.
Yep. So much violence. So much violence on these phones.
So many headshots.
These phones don't seem so smart to me. that'll make sense in 3 days if people listen to all the shows.
I love the fact that there are just little Easter eggs like cross show.
Depending on the show, we are sometimes maybe a month ahead on timeline. it's fun to be to be completely unstuck in time like this. Help.
I didn't want to like waft right past that, but I get the warm foot. I just finished listening to Bonfireside Chat up to the third game, or the end of the third game, because I've finished that now, and I just get the warm fuzzies every time we have Is It Metal come up. That's on this show, so.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. It did. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I had forgotten where that started.
Well, that's kind of the way it goes with the shows now.
Yeah. Jala, what does John say?
John says, I'm going to steal from the best here, extra credits. Missile Command. It's a simple arcade game that brilliantly uses its mechanics to highlight the futility of nuclear war. No matter how well you play, you will lose your cities to incoming missiles until nothing is left. That the game was made during the Cold War only adds to that impact.
Hmm.
Yeah, I remember that episode of Extra Credits.
It's a very good point. I would like to see like a comparison between that and something like DEF CON, which is very explicitly and very heavy-handedly about, you know, the downfalls of nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh man, if a DEF CON dev has not like directly said we were inspired by Missile Command, there's something's got to be wrong.
I don't know. Those are the same guys who did Prison Architect, which may or may not be my answer. let's see. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, without saying too much, Journey was the first game that shockingly jarred me with the interplay between mechanics and theming. I was holding forward on my controller long after the point where it mattered. You know the scene I'm talking about. That realization really drove a chilling spike into my heart.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
I do know.
Got some minor goosebumps thinking about that scene. Yeah. Man, Journey's multiplayer is so good.
Mm-hmm. Because they removed the human element from it.
Yes, they certainly did. Dennis, what does Ollie say?
Yeah, Ollie says, this might be a weird one, but on the PS1, there was a puzzle game called Kurushi. It was a brilliant game that featured mental problems that were logically simple but difficult in practice. The game wanted you to work your brain and feel stressed, and the gameplay itself put pressure on you to not only think but act fast. And it was relentless, so finishing almost any level was both a mental and physical drain. Everyone should check it out. P.S. It was called IQ Intelligent Cube in the States. Cube spelled with a Q.
Yeah.
That sounds like you really got to try this game. It's just mentally draining and exhausting.
Intelligent Cube. Cube spelled with a Q, which ironically is dumb as hell. yeah, this game, I think it was on a PlayStation Underground disc that I had. And it kind of freaked me out at the time that I played it because it is a little bit, so it's very stressful. Like the blocks will, you know, rush at you and you are trying to push them around so you can eliminate all the color blocks, or I forget exactly how it works. But if you got crushed or if you got pushed off the back, it wasn't visually violent, but you heard a guy screaming as he fell into an endless void. And that was kind of upsetting to me as a 10-year-old. Yeah, but definitely as a kind of heightened consequence, difficult puzzler, it is themed really well. Yeah, it's weirdly enough, when he said Kurushi, I knew exactly what he was talking about because I was looking into that game, looking at stuff for Abject Suffering, actually.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Sam writes, might not be intentional, but I felt the difficulty curve in learning the controls for the Wonderful 101 really went along with the story of a disorganized team of superheroes coming together and learning to work as a team to avert catastrophe. Supporting this is the leveling system, which is that the player's functional level is the combined levels of every individual wonderful person that they've collected and used. If you've never played the game, it's in the vein of Devil May Cry or Bayonetta, but you're controlling a number of characters simultaneously who combine into various weapons through analog stick gestures. It works better than it sounds, I swear.
I remember seeing this game when it came out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks pretty cool.
Yep, I have it. It's in shrink wrap because I saw it for $15 on Amazon. I'm like, oh, I love Platinum. I'll get this and play it. And then I didn't. But yeah, Platinum's great.
Mm-hmm. What was that clanging in the back there?
Sounded like something that had been your house, Dennis.
Yeah, that was a I think a recycling can shot from downtown. It was a three-pointer.
Nice.
Woo!
Yeah. Jala, what does Graham say?
Graham says, if you ask me, the Hotline Miami series is about the incoherency and meaninglessness of arcadey action games. Both games take the idea of video game violence to the logical conclusion, a schizophrenic story where nothing really good happens. The theme and gameplay go together perfectly.
And the music.
Of course. Love that synth music, synth wave stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Hotline Miami, you know, if you get the secret endings and stuff, it is very much a fuck you for playing a violent game kind of game.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I hope that's not a spoiler. That game is 4 years old. That's a spoiler. I just don't care. So
Ben, we defer to your judgment.
You know, I'm surprisingly lenient on spoilers now. I think I've given up.
We broke him!
Broke his spirit. Yeah. So that's where Atlas got all of their power. They took it from you. You don't have it anymore. They have it. Was that mean?
Finite amount of spoiler triggered in the world.
Was that mean? I don't want to inadvertently mean. Okay.
No.
All right. Ben, what does David say?
David says, the Katamari games do a good job of matching its wacky narrative and characters with an equally absurd mechanic. Yep.
True. Mm-hmm.
That is very much a game where they decided on the mechanic first, the idea of rolling up and accumulating things, and then immediately put it in the best wrapping possible and gave it a justification through the King of All Cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's good, because a lot of the time it goes the other way around, where they decide at the top and then work downward. Yeah. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
Yeah, Jeremy says, it's a textbook response, but BioShock. Most aspects of the game have been discussed to death. The illusion of choice in games, objectivists can go suck a lemon, etc. But my favorite part of BioShock is the exploration of loneliness and the need for family and community. BioShock repeatedly presents characters and bosses lost in their work at the expense of everything else. People so driven to change the world that they no longer see or possibly care how they're actually affecting it. The good ending is my favorite in all of video games. How much do your accomplishments matter if no one is there to hold your hand as you leave this world?
This is true, but at the same time, like, all I can think about is when I streamed playing BioShock for the first time, and my reaction of bursting into hideous laughter at the end. I mean, like, I was just so amused. I was like, oh my God, what is this crap? So, yeah, like, I can appreciate what he is saying, but my response to the game was very different. Then again, I didn't play it in its time. I played it very much after. Yeah. So,
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that was it.
I'm trying to think of games before BioShock in the first-person shooter genre that leaned that hard into kind of a theme or had that strong of a thesis statement behind them.
There's probably going to be people who come by and say System Shock 2. Like, look at the previous ones. I know it. Deus Ex.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, do you count that as a first-person shooter?
Absolutely.
Or is that an RPG and kind of first-person shooter clothing?
I don't know. It plays like a shooter, and therefore I think it. I think that we are splitting hairs or trying to decide where the line is drawn.
No, that's a skill tree you have to take in the game to be able to split hairs.
Yeah. Well, no, I just the reason Deus Ex came up is because I was thinking, does System Shock apply? System Shock is definitely just a bunch of sci-fi cliches piled on top of each other. Deus Ex is a similar game to that, works on a bunch of systems, but it's a bunch of conspiracy cliches, but I would definitely say that there is something, you know, about the way the world works that is being communicated, and that is backed up by the things it has you doing. Yeah.
Cool.
That was you, Dennis, that did that?
That was.
Okay.
Yep.
Ricardo writes, Papers, Please submerges you in an oppressive bureaucratic system by making you execute the monotonous and arbitrary commands yourself to advance the game, and decide if doing the right thing is worth risking the security that this job offers you and your family, no matter how bad the job actually is. Wow, it suddenly felt too real. Yeah. Yeah, the Papers, Please is sadistic because it pretty much demands that you let one of your family members die so you can, continue working. Yeah, it is an experience. Does anybody else play that? Jolly, you seem like the person who's most likely to have played Papers, Please here.
No, I have not played Papers, Please.
I played it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I have any follow-up questions for it. I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, it very much hits that point to where I think the interesting thing for me was there's some other subplots going on in terms of, like, one day you'll have someone be like, hey, when someone gives you this code, sneak them into the country or whatever. And I totally could have done it on the next day, but I just got lost in the monotony and forgot I was supposed to do it.
No, jeez.
Like I totally could have advanced that plot line or done that extra thing. Like I had enough leniency in the number of demerits I was allowed to get, or you know, whatever, however they track it. Uh-huh. But it was just I got lost in the monotony and forgot I was supposed to be looking for this certain person, and then later I was like, oh shit, that was the guy. I was
I totally spaced on your family, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So fits the theme well in that way as well.
Yeah. Let's see. Jala, what does Chris say?
Chris says, the games from Frictional are it for me. From the Penumbra games to Amnesia the Dark Descent 2, I'm assuming Soma. I haven't gotten around to playing that one yet. The whole interaction with the mouse and pushing and pulling to interact with drawers and doors. When things are frantic and I'm being chased by a jerk monster, fumbling around with pulling doors open and closing makes it even more intense for me. especially when I panic and shut a door on myself before walking through it, and I end up getting slashed to death. God, so good.
It really is like a slasher movie, right? Like the person, you know, trying desperately to twist the knob. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or start the car, man. The car starting is the most difficult thing in the horror universe.
Of course.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Get Out and how it works with that, but I don't want to actually reveal anything because every single detail matters in that movie.
Just watch the trailer and it'll give away the majority of the movie.
I went into it completely blind in the way that it evolved. And the stuff that is supposed to be okay, everything about it is supposed to be scary. The overt horror stuff is not as scary as the really mundane parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't feel like you've seen the movie just because you've seen the trailer. And again, literally everybody in the world is telling you how good Get Out is. So me saying this is just throwing more onto the pile. Yeah. I need to go back and play the rest of the Penumbra games because I think I've only done Overture or whatever one is.
I played some of Amnesia and then I got bored at some point after the monster didn't kill me like way in the beginning part. And then I just like never picked it back up again. And I have Penumbra. I need to go back and play that too.
Yeah.
I should go do the thing. You should play it on Hexcrank.
Yeah, I really should. I should also update Hexcrank. I fell into the same fucking trap again. I'm the worst. Yeah. And Ben.
Jeremy's the worst.
No, I think it's
Brian. Brian.
Yeah, it's Brian.
Now
I about said Murph, but
no,
yeah,
it's not Murph.
Yeah, it's not Murph. It's definitely not Murph. It's Brian. It's Brian now. So Ben, what does Sid say?
Sid says, though it's definitely not on purpose, Drakengard, one story explicitly points out that your main character makes things worse and worse, and each ending beyond the first one is progressively harder to get. This climaxes with the final ending, where they end up ruining our world instead of our fantasy one, making Nier happen.
Yeah, I watched a half-hour video explaining the way that that Drakengard segues into Nier, and I still didn't understand it.
Well, apparently you need to ask Sid for details.
Yeah, maybe Sid can help me out. A similar thing happens with Dragon Age 2. Like, that game frustrated a lot of people for a lot of very valid reasons, but I love its overall story because everything that you're doing makes the world worse. Like, if you look at it as an RPG about the way heroism is not necessary in nearly every situation, and in fact could make things worse than if nobody did anything at all, that is exactly a case study in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
should we take that as your answer, or you had mentioned one you had earlier?
No, so yeah, let's rotate through ours. Mine would definitely have to be Prison Architect, like I alluded to earlier. I love that game. You know, it is a Dwarf Fortress, like it's a management game. You're designing a space, all of that. It can feel a little bit like you're playing The Sims almost, or crossing that in Sim City, but it is definitely darker because, you know, as you know, you are designing and running a for-profit prison. And for as brutal and as awful as the subject matter of the game is, it starts off, the tutorial is you arranging and then building the proper stuff to have somebody executed. What ends up happening is, you know, your motive is for profit. You know, your failure isn't so, the failure state isn't like, hey, somebody gets out, or oh, a prisoner dies. The failure state is running out of money. And so you can accept grants and do all that stuff, but if you go into the black, you're fired, and that's it. So all of a sudden, these terrible things, you know, building the cells too small or not having them appointed well enough, or when that goes wrong and the overcrowding leads to people, you know, hurting each other, or just any number of these awful things, you start looking at it in a wireframe, not recognizing that these things are supposed to be people, and then just completely depersonalizing it and trying to maximize, you know, the number to make sure you don't lose. And so they definitely have a point of view about the way corrections works and ought to work and really, really ought not to work. And you are playing the worst, kind of most degenerate version of it, through this, you know? And so like if you don't stop yourself and like zoom out and look at the real effect of the decisions you're making, in order to not quote unquote lose the game, all of a sudden you can get overwhelmed by it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah, I haven't played that since it left beta. I should probably go in and give it a shot. Yeah, Jala, how about you?
Well, I would have to say Torment Tides of Numenera, because I played Torment Tides of Numenera, which you'll hear more about later. So the tagline on this that I've been catching since I was backing it on the Kickstarter is, what does one life matter? And it allows for any number of different decisions which influence play in both subtle and more dramatic ways. And the theming, like in how the plot twists and everything, I'll talk a little bit about it later, but does a lot with that theme and keeps rolling with it through everything. So yeah,
nice.
That's my answer.
What does one life matter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'll throw out Braid. I think it's an excellent example where the theme of the game is about obsession and regret, and the mechanic is about turning back time, so I think that fits in really nicely. I also think The Last of Us and Fallout kind of tie for an award of making the mechanics of the game all about just being very desperate and scavenging, and with The Last of Us, pretty brutal. I guess both of them have pretty brutal killing, but
yeah.
Last of Us is probably maybe a more realistic version of it.
I mean, The Last of Us, your character isn't a cipher. You know, he actually, you know, you get to see how he interacts with other people, as opposed to you know, just him being a straight pipe for whatever you're trying to accomplish in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No,
both of those are good answers. I need to, I've kind of gone buck wild since I got an external hard drive for my PS4, and I went and redownloaded The Last of Us, in a bid to just have all of the games that I own for PS4 downloaded onto the system. I never did the DLC for that.
Yeah, oh, that's good DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So two thumbs up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two thumbs up, especially...
One, that's new, the other.
Yeah.
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 Okay. And then Dennis, let's cycle around to you.
Yeah. For me, for like an entire game, and I've talked about Metrico before on the podcast, but it was definitely Metrico, which hit me very hard as I was in a corporate role where I was dealing with lots and lots of infographics and numbers and everything. And kind of the core tenet of Metrico is like, basically every button that you push on the Vita, or every, like, you know, the motion sensors, the camera, like everything gives input into the game in some way. And so you have all this control, but not enough understanding to like know how to use that and to make all that control meaningful. And so the game is about kind of just trying to figure out, because, you know, what each input does kind of varies level by level. So the game, the puzzle element of the game, is just kind of figuring out, okay, I have all the control in the world. I have all these inputs. I'm kind of overwhelmed with data. How do I make any meaning out of it? Which I think fits very well with the kind of the idea of, you know, staring at spreadsheets and you know, working with giant databases and big data in general.
Mm-hmm.
I fit very well for me. Individual moment from a game, I would say, though, goes to Shadow of the Colossus at the very end. When you are, it's almost kind of like the journey moment where, who was it, talked about holding up on the thumbstick long after that moment was gone.
Yeah.
But the same sort of thing where I was holding on, I was maxing out, you know, or using all of my grip, even though I knew there was nowhere for me to go if I hung on at the end of that game.
Yeah.
That'd be really great if we could go back in time, or if they could program this in where they have stats on like how long people hold on to the stairs.
I just can't believe there's not a mod just like the one where you know, they have Aeris live in Final Fantasy VII. There's got to be some kind of mod where you're able to get away from that hole in Shadow of the Colossus.
Escape into a broken, unfinished world.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good question. Got some good discussion out of it. Thank you so much for putting that up, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for responding to that. If you want to participate in those, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for them to go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to either Dennis or Jala, sometimes both. And sometimes people request or put in suggestions for topics. So it really is a group effort.
Yay!
Yeah.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing this week. Who would like to go first?
Ooh, pick me.
Go, Jolla, go.
Okay, so in my co-op corner, I played Vermintide with Sam, Greg, and Conrad, and we finished the final mission. So it was pretty tough, and it took several tries on easy mode before we could beat it, just because there's endless hordes that just don't stop coming, and it's rough. And my eventual role was as a runner, because basically you have to get a bunch of barrels full of gunpowder to blow stuff up, and then you have to break a bunch of chains holding something up while there's hordes coming at you. So I was a runner, so I didn't deal a lot of damage, but I took tons and tons of damage. But all the same, we were just about dead, and I darted past the mobs with two down players, and like I think a special was on my butt. Anyway, and I finished releasing the chain, and it was, you know, just at the right moment, and we managed to survive barely. So it was pretty cool. And Greg was playing the dwarf, so he was a tank, and basically he was my escort for most of it, and then the other two, Sam and Conrad, were basically holding down the fort at the destination while Greg was running me back and forth and trying to kill the mobs. So it was pretty cool. And also I did get to play a little bit of my Dishonored 2 stream. So I did a spur of the moment session one afternoon and finished out the level I was on with Dr. Hypatia. I was quieter this time around because due to the timing, I didn't have as many people in the stream watching and commenting. So I didn't have as much interaction, but not sure when the next stream will be, probably sometime this weekend, but I have a big race, so I don't know. Sorry, just watch for whenever the notification comes up, and if you can catch it, great, because I can't plan them on any regular basis.
Right.
The main thing that I played, though, guys, I finished Torment Tides of Numenera.
Awesome.
Yay!
I actually stayed up late so I could finish playing it so I could talk about it in its entirety today. Yeah. So, executing gushing attack. So, the very first thing I want to say is that this game really, really, really must be played multiple times. I know that Planescape Torment has all these different little bits that you can go back through and pick up on, you know, repeated playthroughs. This one has a lot of content to the point that you are very, very acutely aware of the stuff that you won't be able to finish the quest lines for or whatever because of the choices that you've already made, you know, in this particular playthrough or another one. So that's not to his detriment. That just means there's a lot more to explore and a lot more reason to go back and revisit the game. So if I'm noticing a bunch of stuff that I want to go back and do the next time around, I can only imagine how much more content there is that I don't even know of yet. I'm just not even cognizant of it. So the second thing I want to say about this is this game is very effective at making me really want to play tabletop Numenera. Like, if someone wanted to set up a long distance RP on Roll20 or something, I would absolutely be interested and would do my best to find a workable time somewhere to commit to it.
Yeah.
Even as much as I'm already juggling, I would love that. There is so much lore in this game. Way more than Planescape Torment, and a lot of it is just kind of tossed out there like shiny little bits meant to make Jolla curious and eager to go see more, and it works. There are so many different races, so many different places that are mentioned, events described and whatnot that have absolutely no real bearing on the story that you play through that I'd love to go and explore and learn more about. I really want to go read the novellas that I got from backing the Kickstarter. And I read the comic, which, by the way, you know, the orphan girl that I've been just so down on and I don't want her at my party. And she never grew on me, by the way. I never did like her.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe if I finished out her storyline, I would have done that. But I apparently did not. I missed something. Hmm. So she did never grow on me as a character. I have no maternal instincts apparently. But I read the comic, and the comic is all about Rin. So if you are a Rin fan, if you have played this game, or if you play this game and you end up liking the little orphan girl, little orphan Annie, you can find all about her in the comics. So, but anyway, I also want to get the tabletop rule books for Numenera, even if I don't ever play the game.
Yeah.
But a duck feed group would be so badass.
Yeah.
Anyway, to be honest, even though the thing that I had read said that you need to take Little Orphan Annie to get the best ending, from what I see, the endings, like all the choices that you make in the game, are basically the ending of that particular sequence is described in a text box at the end of the game. It's not like there's some cinematic thing for you to see that's, oh, it's so awesome. I mean, it's a paragraph of text.
Yeah.
So I would not have felt eaten up about it if I had, you know, sold her to the slaver or kicked her through the doorway so she could go through time and find a new family or whatever the hell I was going to do with her. But she does end up becoming useful eventually, because when I was talking about her last time around, she could only basically use items. But once she gets to tier 3, which is just how they talk about the level system, she ends up getting the capacity to use healing spells, and also eventually gets a skill that is very useful and lets her reuse ciphers, which basically gives her infinite special items, if you will. Hmm. So very cool.
Is she like the Magikarp of the game?
Yeah, she is like Magikarp. She is absolutely a Magikarp. Although I wouldn't say that she's like there are other characters that are more powerful, and I don't feel that you need her OP capacity to really go through this game. I'll talk more about the combat near the end of the game in a bit, but anyway, I didn't end up getting her absolute best ending apparently, because I was apparently supposed to do something that I completely missed. So I'll have to go back through sometime.
Yeah.
All the characters other than Rin grew on me a lot.
Is that just because they weren't a drain on the game mechanically?
No, like they actually just, as the story progresses, even if a character seems to have, you know, like a certain face value for you, there are increasingly more details about them that are unraveled as you go through the game, and they have quest lines that you need to go through for each individual character that, you know, gives you a lot more backstory and a lot more depth. And Tibir is a really cool character, but in the end, I actually think I like Eretus' quest line the best of the two of those.
Okay.
Eretus is the super crazy adventure guy who's just he seems like a big, dumb, very happy man who just wants to go out and be a hero.
Yeah.
But like he's basically, he comes across as being nutty and very simple, but when you learn why he is how he is and you make decisions about that, it turns out being a really awesome you know, quest line overall, more so than Tibir's. Tibir's is kind of a more traditional kind of path. I don't want to reveal too much about it.
Yeah.
But what makes me sad, though, is that due to my following the quest line for Eretus and my ultimate decision about what to do with him during the end game, he wasn't with me in the final battles. And the game ended up dropping another character, Matkina, in for me to use instead. But she was at the same level that she would have been if I had taken her when I first came across her, like way back when. So she was way underleveled. And that didn't really matter, because the battles in this game are not challenging battles. I'll go into more about that. But to finish talking about Eretus, his skills end up getting really badass, and between him, Tibir, and myself, we ended up being a really good trio, because I was a nano, Tibir is a jack, and Eritus is a glaive, so that's all three of the character classes you can pick from. So yeah. We were balanced and very complementary to one another. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we already were so well balanced that it didn't matter that my fourth character, Rin, was, you know, like item girl, you know, that didn't have any bearing on that.
Yeah.
So the spontaneous interactions that you have in between all the characters, like when you're in town or just hanging out, idling, they're really, really great. Like the back and forth that just comes up out of the blue between the characters is great. And there is such a sense of so much more to do and see, to the point of feeling like everything in this world is endless, even if it's not, thanks to all of the lore threads that are teased and the loads of the playable content that, you know, I'm aware there's so much more to that I haven't even brushed on the surface of yet.
Yeah.
This, of course, is way up my alley because I like to explore.
Yeah.
I'm curious and I like flexibility. And so this is all the stuff that I like. Yeah. You know, I haven't seen a game that does all of this and hits all of those buttons in quite a long time. In fact, I can't name one off the top of my head that has so much to it short of an open world title. And even then, those end up getting really stale after a while. And this feels fresh throughout the entire experience. Like there's not a point where I'm just like, oh, what a drudgery or anything like that.
Yeah. So what's the most obvious variable to change on a subsequent playthrough? Because the game's whole system with the tides seems less, just kind of less binary than just good or evil. what's your next playthrough going to look like? What are you going to change?
I'm probably, because next time around I'm taking Alagurn, damn it, because I wanted Alagurn this time and I couldn't because of Rin. So, right. Although I may or may not have Rin next time too, because I didn't finish her storyline and I want to see what that's about. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if I want to have her in the party again or what. But because Alagurn is a nano, and because I already had Eritus, who was a glaive, I probably end up playing a glaive next time, and then taking Alagurn and possibly Matt Kena, who is a jack, because that way that balances out the way that I would like. Insofar as the role-playing elements, I'm probably going to play a complete asshole jerk character. You know? So
yes.
Is be asshole man. So. So anyway, talking about a little bit about Planescape Torment and Tides of Numenera, they are very different animals. There are things about Planescape Torment which stick with me more strongly than in Tides of Numenera, like the music, some of the plot tidbits and whatnot, really struck a stronger chord in that game.
Yeah.
But overall, as a game experience and as a narrative and as something that's replayable and whatever, Numenera flows better, feels more replayable, feels richer. I wouldn't really say that one or the other is better than, mm-hmm. as they're products of a completely different era in game design. But of the two, I am much more likely to drop in and play Numenera over and over again. Whereas Planescape Torment, I really loved it. I played it through once. I have not played through a full playthrough again, you know? Yeah. But Numenera, I can turn around and see myself playing this again later this week, you know?
Yeah.
So the battles, I'll talk more about in a minute, because I kind of want to like finish talking sugar and then tell you about the little niggly bits.
Yeah.
So I mentioned it way in the beginning, but on Twitter, I've had a little bit of exchange with one of the devs, Gavin, et cetera.
Okay.
Is the Gavin, et cetera, is the Twitter handle. He's a writer. And he's regularly been dropping Numenera trivia and chit-chatting about whatever I happen to be doing after I've stopped every one of my sessions and posted something with some commentary. Mm-hmm. So shout out. thank you, Gavin, for taking the time to chat a bit about the game. You are awesome. And I actually had him and Colin both give some commentary. I asked him if there was something they wanted me to say to the listeners of the show. So.
Oh, yeah?
From 7, assume that everything your character says can be dangerous to you, and pick scan thoughts on your replays if you didn't pick it the first time around. And I, of course, picked scan thoughts on my first playthrough, but I also want it on every subsequent playthrough.
Right.
So, because basically what scan thoughts is, it's pretty obvious what it does, but the surface thoughts of all the characters show up in the text window after, you know, your observations and whatever, like according to your skill set.
Oh, that sounds incredibly overpowered. That's like having the heart in and Dishonored.
Yeah, it's like that.
The ability to talk to animals in Divinity Original Sin.
Well, and what it does is it really helps you out with some of your role-playing choices when you are trying to figure out whether somebody's lying or if they're, you know, what you want to do with them. Are they, whatever, you know, like having the scan thoughts, like having the perception ability allows you to observe, you know, different body language things, you know, that are going on. But having scan thoughts allows you to know at least a little bit, like a sentence or two of what they're thinking. So,
yeah.
So that's very, very useful to have. From Colin, he says, your choices have an effect, even if subtle. There's a lot of buried reactivity in this game. Yes, there is. There is. I mentioned the first time I was talking about this game about how I was playing through a quest and then the quest giver's house fell into the ocean and I couldn't finish out the quest because she died, like, thanks to the results of another quest that I had done. And that's a very, very big and very obvious way that one thing impacted another. But even your conversations with individuals in town and stuff will, you know, can influence much bigger things than you think.
Yeah.
Or, you know, can influence the way that people react to you at such and such place, you know.
Yeah.
So all of that said, like, I really love this game to the point that I have Planescape Torment as one of my top 10 favorite games. Mm-hmm. Torment, Tides of Numenera is also in that list now. I cannot replace one with the other because they are very different.
Right.
But they are both in the list now. So, woo! All of that. Okay, so all of that
said.
Yeah,
I want to hear your criticisms.
Yeah. There's a couple little bits, little niggly bits that I want to talk about. So, first off, pacing. Most of this game, including the very end of it, has a lot of role playing to it, to the point that most of the crises, remember, that's like the urgent events where you've got turn based kind of system going on.
Encounters, yeah.
Encounters, there you go. The crises are able to be solved without fights most of the time. This seems to change when you reach the second half of the quest lines in the Bloom, which is like very close to end game. And I don't know, let me just say as a disclaimer, I don't know if that's because of how I was playing or if this even rings true for other people's experiences or if it was just the way that I happened to approach everything at that point.
Okay.
But seems like there's a random glut of battles glommed in together right in that one little chunk. And then after that, it wasn't like that. There's nowhere else in the game that it's like that except this one section. And again, I it may just be how I was playing it or how my role playing, you know, repercussions panned out for me. I don't know.
Okay.
But at the same time, I didn't feel like the fights were there just as filler or anything. I understood the purpose of every one of them. It didn't feel like just, you know, randomized battle number 5.
Mm-hmm.
But pacing wise, it obviously threw things off because it's like, you know, I go from all this role playing stuff to suddenly it's a turn based encounter and then another one. And another one. Well, damn, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, the battles are not hard. I really would have preferred more of a challenge. They don't feel like the battles don't feel awkward or anything. They feel smooth and, you know, they control well, but they just aren't ramped up to the point that I feel like I have to really consider my skills and work around deficiencies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like I said, like my little triumvirate of characters was a well-polished little party that, you know, just they were able to withstand everything and it was not hard to do the battles. I did them, but I didn't feel like, oh, fuck, how am I going to finish this? You know,
is there any kind of selectable difficulty in the game?
Not that I can see. No.
Hmm.
I guess if you could, you know, handicap yourself by not using ciphers or, you know, items, that might handicap you enough. But you get them all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, also the second big niggly bit, bugs. Most of the game was bug free, but again, in that latter half of the bloom area, which is again pretty close to endgame, stuff started getting glitchy. Okay. The battles that I talked about that kept on popping up got complicated because the crises themselves started to slow down. It just seemed like the game took longer to process whose turn it was. And it was just like, hello. It just kind of got hung up on the process of switching from character to character. There was a particular issue during two different crises where the game just errored to the point that it froze on me and I had to reload and try again through that encounter.
No, that never feels good.
No, it worked. You know, it worked on both of those times the second time I went through it. But all the same, it was an impediment that slowed down my gameplay and messed up some of my enjoyment because I was like way into it. And then it's just like, oh, fucking, oh, you know. These are known bugs, and in Exile, it already knows about it. I'm presuming they are working on it. They've already patched the game, you know, since its release. So I'm sure at some point these issues are going to be patched out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's on the roster somewhere. So don't let that like stop you. It's not unplayable. It's not god awful. It may not even happen all the time. It may, again, just have been how I was playing. I don't know. But the bugs stopped after that one section in that latter half of the bloom, and then the end game was completely bug-free. So it was just this one chunk that was kind of messed up, and then the rest of the game was fine. So,
yeah.
They weren't game-breaking for me, but they did slow me down to the point that I had to stay up late yesterday to try to finish playing.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, that's really about the only criticisms I can put on this game. I know when I first was talking about it, I was talking about, you know, nothing has grabbed me yet and, you know, really sunk its teeth into me the way that Planescape Torment had, you know, right at the first. But, you know, as we discussed then, it's just it had a slow ramp up in Planescape Torment, too. It took a while before, you know, it got to that point as well. And I'm really curious to see what you think of the story reveals at the end of the game, Cole, and what you think compare and contrast with the Planescape Torment. I would really love to talk to you about that. So you need to play this game some too.
I definitely do.
Because it speaks not just of the development and the changes in the industry itself, since the release of Planescape Torment, but also the maturation of the devs and the changes of life that the devs and the players have all gotten to, you know, that these people were around for Planescape Torment and are now making / playing this Numenera game.
Yeah.
You know, how that gap in time, you know, has altered everything to where the theming and everything is oh, I want to talk about it, but I can't. and then we can talk about it. Do it.
So, something you can talk about. So obviously there, you know, if I ask you like, hey, what's something cool that happened? That would include a lot of stuff that would be spoilers, something that people probably wouldn't want to have spoiled. But like last week we talked about that Twitter string with just the random list of stuff that somebody encountered that was hilarious out of context. Is there some kind of like small trivial detail that you've encountered that's been like, oh, holy shit, I can't believe they did that, but I'm so happy they did?
Actually, while you're asking me that question, I'm going to put a pause button on that for a second because
okay.
I realized that I had not talked about the mirror casters at all.
Mirror casters?
Casters.
Well, I didn't hear what you said.
M-E-R-E caster.
Okay.
Me caster. But it is a mirror.
Okay.
A mirror caster. Anyway, it's an item that you can pick up, an artifact that you can use, and then it switches into kind of like a choose your own adventure mode where there's like a long chunk of text and then you have your options of what you can do in response to it. But it has like just an illustrated background. Like it switches from your main screen where you have all the characters hanging out to, you know, like it being a memory. And basically, the Mirrorcasters are little tidbits of memory that you are delving through, and you inhabit temporarily the body of somebody who is in the past doing something or other that's related to the story. And, you know, you can kind of try to change the past a little bit and, you know, see how that affects things now. Anyway, that's what the Mirrorcasters are. And you come across several of them in the game, and it's a completely different play style or play mode. Even if it's essentially the same role-playing elements that you've been working with, but like a different format. So, so that's something that they do that's interesting and cool. Kind of taking like, I don't know, King of Dragon Pass or something like that kind of kind of approach.
Yeah, I like that. I love managing a long-term system like that that pays off in different ways.
Yeah. So anyway, your question about something random that was, you know, like a little thing that was really cool. There's a lot of little things that are really cool in this game. I can't really pick one that's just like baller, like beyond everything else. Yeah. So that's the thing. That's why I had that whole Twitter stream of a bunch of random shit that happens, because it's just pretty, you know, it's really cool. And I've mentioned it, but like, for me, one of the things that I like best is the fact that the writers and the, you know, the other people working on this game really work hard to make it feel like there is so much more than just this one story. One big criticism that I have of a lot of games and media in general, fictional media, is that they will create a world that exists only for this one story, and it doesn't feel like the world itself is living and breathing. But this world is very much alive and very much its own entity and doing its own thing. And it's pretty fucking badass. So, I mean, like, there's so much to that that really, like, I can't pick a little instance of it. It's in all the little times where you have somebody drop a line about where they're from, and they're like, oh, it's beyond over there past this part. And, you know, they're talking about these cities you're never going to see in this game, and you know you're never going to see them. Yeah. They're talking about creatures or these civilizations that are lost or, you know, whatever. And all these different things that they just name drop left and right. And you know Ajala. You know Ajala got to go. Go like everywhere and go see everything. So so that's fascinating, and I love it. I love when they drop that stuff in and just let it go. That's it, you know. So it speaks of a lot of love and care that they've put so much time and effort into this game to make it a living, breathing world that is far bigger than just the story that you're playing through.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. You should play it.
Yeah, I should. I really should. I've got it. Dennis, Ben,
you've been in the face.
Yeah, it is. Man. But like both of these huge Kickstarter things, I guess one isn't as huge, but like both of these Kickstarter things I backed forever ago, got real excited about, forgot existed, came out within a month of each other. It seems like this and Thimbleweed Park. Yeah.
The blessing and the curse of Kickstarter.
Yep. Yeah.
The good part is you get a future present. The bad part is you probably won't have the time or capacity to play that future present.
God, capacity. Bandwidth. why do we both laugh exactly the same way? I don't like that one bit.
Are you trying out a new laugh?
No, I'm not. We just
jargon laugh.
Yeah. Dennis or Ben, you guys were kind of quiet. Did you have any questions about this game?
I'm taking it all in.
I feel like I kind of want to see it be streamed or something like that, so I'd have a better idea of how it plays, because it sounds like it's a video game version of D&D, but it sounds cool.
Yeah. It sounds like a video game version of D&D, but, you know, cool.
Yeah. I see that as somebody who has played D&D.
Oh, me too.
Well, Planescape Torment is a D&D campaign setting, and that was the first game. And this is a CRPG based, well, you know, inspired by spiritual successor of, you know, that. So, yes, it is. It is very D&D.
Having, I mean, Ben.
Without being D&D at all.
Having not played Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, knowing that you really enjoy that, this is a Chris Avalon joint, if you were not aware.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. It had been a while since it was said, and I just wanted to make sure you knew. So if you have a tolerance for that, you might, you know, that might transfer over to this as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that everything, Jala?
That is everything. And by the way, Ben, if you want me to maybe do a little bit of a stream for a little bit, I'm not going to play the whole game on stream, but I can play a little bit on stream sometime, maybe. Chat with me later.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not Persona 5, so you'll actually be able to.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the law will not stop you. do you guys mind if I go? Because I've got one. I would like to talk about Zelda. The Breath of the Wild.
Somebody needed to do the thing. Tell us all about the thing.
Oh my gosh, guys, it's so good. this is pretty similar to Get Out and Logan, where I'm late to the party, you know, by necessity because it took me so long to get a Switch. I sunk a little bit of time into it today, and a little bit over the weekend as well. And I am off of the main peninsula, or main plateau, rather, that you're on. I love the way this game opens up. Instead of being like a Zelda game where there are hours and hours of people talking to you and explaining exactly how Link should move around and running from town to town, you wake up in this cave and you walk out. You have a disembodied voice that says, "Help, you know, here's this thing." You pick up this little iPad that acts as your interface. Then you talk to like one random old dude outside of this tomb who's like, "Oh, maybe go over there or maybe not. You know what? I don't care." and he says, "Hey, if you do what I tell you, I'm going to give you this sweet ass hang glider that I have." And so obviously you want to do it, but sometimes maybe not, because even though this is like a tutorial intro area, all of the tutorialization happens as you go and explore it. It is not railroading you to a thing and saying, "Hey, you need to do this thing." Like, if you walk up along the mountains and, you know, you notice that, hey, it turns out that the temperature around Link is actually modeled. And if I'm walking up here without any real clothes on, and without any protection from the cold, I take damage. And then, boom, here's this old dude sitting there at a cooking pot saying, "Hey, there's certain dishes you can make that will warm you up." You know, and then that'll slow down this effect. Or if you have a torch and have that and carry that with you, well, that'll warm you up too. And so it's just like this small little thing. And the dialogue there is like, "Oh, cool, a torch. I can set things on fire," or "Thank you." Like, there's this weird thing where like there are two dialogue options, and one of them is like the degenerate player way of saying, "Oh, I can exploit this to cause mayhem."
Yay, mayhem. I like mayhem.
Yeah. But it's just such a breath of fresh air. There was no, you know, there was no like cinematic, no real dialogue to be had aside from those fleeting little interactions until I completed four of these shrines, and I probably explored for like 4 hours before I got like the whole, "Oh, and Ganon came and destroyed Hyrule Kingdom, and now it's up to you to, you know, to kill him and restore this." Like, all of that, which would have happened before the title screen, happens after 4 hours of play. And that is tremendous. And like, it's a tutorial area, but you have kind of the full experience. There's no major dungeon up there, but you have these shrines, which are, think like a puzzle room from a regular Zelda dungeon. Okay. Like, hey, the doors have locked up and you need to use whatever tool you've gotten, to solve this before you can get out. Except on this tutorial island, what you do is you get a new ability that is just there for you. So the key verbs are handed out as opposed to each dungeon, having a new like little tool that's like a lock and key kind of thing.
Huh.
Huh. So like one of them gives you bombs, and you get round bombs and square bombs depending on if you want them to roll down a hill, you know. You get like a telekinesis that lets you move metal things with like a magnet ability. There's an amazing one. It's stasis, and so you can freeze things that are in motion, or and they demonstrate this in a wonderful way. This is, you know, feasibly within the first 15 minutes of the game, so I don't know if it's that much of a spoiler, and it's also a core mechanic. There's a boulder in a narrow pathway, and you go up and you try and hit it, and it doesn't move, right? It even gives you a sledgehammer and says like, oh, this is good for moving big heavy things. Doesn't move. What you need to do is stasis it, even though it's standing still. You go up and you attack it, and like this arrow shows up that gets bigger and bigger with each attack. When it's stasised, it accumulates all of the force that was was applied to it while it's frozen. And then when you release it, boom, it goes flying. So stasis, hit, and then release, and then off it goes. Like you hit it 16 times at once.
So you're doing those vector graph problems from early high school again.
Yep, kinda. Yeah. But it's just it's tremendous the way that it just like opens it up and gives you. I was kind of walking around because you have a map and you can place these markers, you know, as you kind of look through the scope, you know. So here's a tower, here's a shrine, etc. And I saw a couple of named areas on the map, like something woods. I was walking, I was like, oh, there's a clearing here, and I've already taken out some of the goblin camps around this place. As I'm walking out, boom, this gigantic stone golem raises up from the ground, and it's a mini boss encounter on the world map.
Nice.
And so, you know, I try and fight it, and he, you know, he chiefs me with one shot. Just boom, you're down. I only have three hearts, right? And so then I notice he's got this kind of like mineral deposit, this crystal on his back. And I think, well, surely I don't. Nope, you Shadow of the Colossus your way up on top of him, and then, you know, whip out that sledgehammer from before and attack that a bunch of times, hoping he doesn't shake me off. And then he dies, and I get all of these sweet, sweet materials.
Yay, materials.
Yeah.
And you stumbled into that organically.
Yeah, I was just running from place to place, and I was like, oh, this is like an interesting little area that's between these two goblin camps.
That's great.
Yeah, I just I couldn't believe it when it happened. Same thing, you know. You pick up, you know, speaking of materials, you pick up these ingredients, right? So you can get like apples and mushrooms and stuff, and just eat them raw to get some health back. Or when you're at a cook pot, which you have to light by taking a torch out, touching it to the flame, and then, you know, touching it beneath the thing. You can just pick some of these items from within your inventory, throw them into the pot, and they will synthesize into these foods that will like supercharge you, give you temporary extra hearts or temporary extra stamina. And the combinations, you just kind of have to determine them yourself, right? So mm-hmm. I had some mushrooms, and I had some herbs, and I had some peppers, and I was like, well, these seem like they would taste good together. So you've got the spices, you got the peppers, blah, 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 put them in there. It was like, ooh, spicy mushroom stew is what came out.
Oh, nice.
Out. Yeah.
I wonder how many unique titles there are for food.
I have no idea, because like when you put in something that doesn't, when you put in something that is not a known recipe, like they have like a horns and stuff like that, like they say, oh, you could put this in with a stew or something and make it more savory. So I was like, okay, I'll just give this a shot. I threw in like honey and some kind of meat or whatever, and then one of these, it comes out as like, I forget what it's called, it's like discredited food or something like that. And the icon for it, it's all blurry, like it's like censored porn, and it looks like just like this, it's like, oh, this, yeah. It's like this gross,
what have you done?
It's like this gross green blob with a bone sticking out of it, and it's like, oh gosh. And it doesn't, as far as I can tell, it doesn't make you sick. Maybe if you eat enough of it, you do. But like, it just restores one health. Like, oh, even if you fail, you still get something out of this. So like, if you're desperate for it, like, you still, you know, it's not a complete waste. I don't know. Like, this is great. And like I said, I'm just barely out of the tutorial area, but I spent hours and hours there.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm super excited to go into this. And look at it even more, not for the usual reasons I'd be excited about a Zelda game, you know, like it's going to be pretty cool to go do these big four dungeons or whatever. But there are 120 shrines that are all these portal test chambers that are just like testing out the physics and the weird systems collisions and stuff. Yeah.
Awesome.
I love it. It's great. Do you guys have any questions about it? I feel like I just gushed.
No, that's I gushed too. Yeah.
This game sounds like a traditional backlog filler where it's like, well, yeah. I've got this game, so my backlog's just going to pile up for a while.
Yep, this is just my life now.
Yep. I don't have any questions about it because I eventually want to play it.
Yeah, I mean, there's that.
But I mean, like, do you have any questions about the way it works? About the way
should
you
I
know?
Play it?
Yeah, absolutely, dummy.
All right.
The end.
Yeah. I don't know. That's all I've been playing. And if you guys don't have any questions, I don't feel like there's anything more that I have to say. Again, I'm so sorry if people have heard this from every other show that's ever talked about it, but like. It could definitely go off the rails now that I'm out of the tutorial and they don't feel like they need to make this radical first impression. But at least so far, I'm incredibly satisfied with the way this has panned out.
Yay!
No, I'm glad you're having such a good time with it.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of percentage done that you are with it?
No. I really have no idea. I've done 4 shrines out of 120.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah. So between Ben and Dennis, who wants to go?
Yeah, I've just got one short one, so I can drop that off real quick.
Okay.
I tried out a game called Minion Masters, which is by Beta Dwarf, which is the same company that made Forced Showdown.
Is this a licensed Minions game?
No.
Oh, thank God.
God, no.
Jesus, man. You really, really worried.
Yeah, it's a free iPhone game, and I've sunk about $6,000 into it.
Okay.
No, it's interesting. So I realized playing this game because a lot of like the characters, the minions, were the same between Forced Showdown and Minion Masters.
Okay.
And what I realized is Beta Dwarf's first game was just called Forced. It was this kind of co-op Diablo-like game that focused on puzzling. Mm-hmm. And then every game that they've made since is like kind of a spin-off of that world. So like leverages the same characters and kind of the same tone and aesthetics. Since I haven't played Forced, I just didn't notice for Showdown. And I feel like the way that Forced Showdown works, like it doesn't feel like the characters are all, you know, references or callbacks. With Minion Masters, I think just with the structure of the game, it is a little more obvious that, oh, this is referencing a different game. Okay. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The basic format of Minion Masters is a MOBA, a very simple MOBA, where you control unleashing the creeps, the minions, instead of controlling a hero.
Okay.
So you get a quote unquote deck of minions, and this has a deck building element, but 10 minions that you can include, and you draw 4 of them, and each has a different mana cost, and your mana goes up over time. And when you know you have the right amount of mana for the minion, you click to launch that minion into the world, and the battle arena has just 2 lanes. There's a top lane and a bottom lane. Each lane has a bridge in the middle of it. And if your minion was the last thing to touch that bridge, it lights up in your team's color and you get extra experience from it. And so all you're doing, when you play a minion, the card for it goes back into the bottom of your deck. And so you're cycling through your deck and unleashing minions. They're advancing towards the enemy base. The enemy's minions are advancing towards your base. And it's all about kind of controlling the 2 lanes, and kind of pushing them out to eventually get to the base and destroy the base. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of an elevated game of rock, paper, scissors, because certain minions are good versus other minions and bad versus others. Like you might have a really powerful minion that attacks slowly. That's going to be really good at taking out individual targets. The way to counter that is to have a minion, which is actually like a group or a swarm of smaller minions.
Dennis, quick favor for me, your buddy Cole. Can you say peons instead of minions?
I can. I don't know if I can do it with a straight face, but okay. I'll try.
All right.
Peon Masters. Yeah, Peon Masters just doesn't have that.
No, never say Peon Masters. Never say Peon Masters.
I think this backfired quickly.
Whatever you're into, Cole.
Hey, the president's into it.
Yeah, right. So it's, you know, the rock, paper, scissors of, okay, I see they're sending this to the top lane. That means I can send, you know, the counter to that into the top lane, try to hold that lane. Or you could say, well, okay, they're trying to do that in the top lane. I'll send a bunch of minions into the bottom lane and try to overwhelm them there. So it's an interesting dynamic. And then layer on that the fact that, you know, everyone kind of gets to create a custom deck that they're playing out of. And you've got a game with a lot of strategic depth to it. Mm-hmm. So it was easy enough at first blush. I only played versus the computer, which I feel like is kind of easy mode. So I haven't really seen what's out there. I expect that the second I step into PvP, I'm just going to get crushed. Because it does feel like the different cards, kind of some just have an overtly better power level than others. But yeah, it's a really interesting concept, and it's a way, you know, like this is, like I said, kind of has that MOBA aspect to it, kind of has that deck building aspect to it. There's rock, paper, scissors in there. There's RTS in there a little bit.
Oh, wow.
But it's just this really interesting mutt of different genres that I haven't seen before.
Hmm.
So that's all really intriguing.
Yeah.
I will say, disappointingly, where Force Showdown felt like kind of a complete product within itself, and the economy of that game didn't require any additional investment. So you have a good run in Force Showdown, you're going to get like 15 extra cards.
Okay.
At the end of it, with the gold that you earn. In this one, you will get like one extra card every, what's 1,000 divided by 20? Like every 50 games, you're going to get an extra card. That's oppressive.
Yeah.
You can do in-game quests to try to earn extra gold, but they're pretty stringent. So it feels kind of designed to funnel you towards the game's shop, which there is a that pay to play or pay to win element to it. Mm. So I was already feeling like I'd kind of lost steam on earning in-game currency. And I only did the computer tutorial, so I can only imagine what would happen if I wanted to sink any significant amount of time into the game.
If you're actually trying to save up enough tickets for the mountain bike.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's really unfortunate, because it really is just an interesting game that I you know, is not a ripoff, or, you know, I don't know of any direct analogs to it.
Yeah.
So I love the ingenuity. It feels a little bit buried in a in a bad, you know, free to play structure. Hmm. There's there's heroes that you can select, so you can have a different hero in your base, and that hero has different powers. But really, I never found myself really thinking about that during the match. It was all about the minion on minion violence, the peon on peon violence. and like the heroes just serve to kind of push the game towards a climax, because they get more powerful as time goes on. But they could have just as easily made everyone have one uniform hero, and I don't think it would have been that different. Now, that could just be me not understanding the strategy of the game, but I didn't notice a difference in the time that I played it.
Yeah.
But yeah, fun stuff. I continue to be very intrigued by Beta Dwarf's stuff. There's a couple other games that they've made. Like I said, Forced, their original one, I haven't tried yet. But I've liked what I've seen so far, so I might continue to make the rounds of their games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they don't include the similar bad free to play.
Yeah. Well, I never said I'd sink a significant amount of time into
it. But at least.
And I did get it for free, so they just had a week long, like, here, this is free event. So it could very possibly be that they do that all the time, and this was just the first time I saw it. And so it's, you know, their other games are paid and are fine, because that's the way Forced Showdown is, but who knows? They've earned enough goodwill and have shown that they have good enough ideas and unique enough ideas to have me check out another thing that they do.
Yeah. That's what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So fun stuff.
Is that it?
That is it for me. That's my one new thing. I've continued to play Horizon Zero Dawn. I very much have the same feeling like you described stumbling into that monster that you had the mini boss fight with.
Yeah.
I feel like that is Horizon Zero Dawn for me. Like, yeah, just wandering around the world and like the random crazy stuff that happens is just as much fun as anything designed. But Ben, I would like to hear about that from you, and I can add color commentary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of the game, because I think the main narrative is not that fun, maybe?
Oh, no.
I don't know. Like, I think I've done most of the missions now, and in terms of, like, or the different, like, side missions or the different variants you can do. They're fine, but I think I agree with you, Dennis, where I do think it's fun to just pick a path and kind of go that direction, kind of see what you run into, hopefully, like, run away or save yourself in time. But one of the things I'm kind of disappointed by, they give you abilities of how you can kind of like tame some of the animals that you meet. I don't want to go in too detailed of it because I don't want to spoil anything. But one of the things I disliked about it is there's not really a lot of variability in what powers they give you. It's just kind of a blanket power, and it doesn't really feel too meaningful the way that they just give you like four or five at once. And, you know, like some of them are kind of even useless.
I'll say more about that, because you can tame different animals that are machines that then serve as your mounts that you can ride around on. Sure. And you get some that are like, you know, lance horns that have these big prongs on their heads, or like these, you know, whatever things that it looks like when you ride them, like you should be able to like bowl people over, or like, you know, get them to use their horns to attack. And then you hit the R1 button, which is the attack button while you're riding them. And everything that I've ridden to date just does the same old like rear up and paw, you know, like trample the enemy attack. And that felt like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like there's two modes. Either it turns friendly and maybe it'll attack other things if there's anything else in the area, or you can hop on and ride around. The hop on and ride around is nice, but given how like variable the creatures are, it would be like a lot more interesting if those like abilities were more varied and more unique.
Now, have you realized yet that when you're riding around on a machine, you need to be running over every poor real animal that you can get your hands on?
Real animals?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's like boars and foxes and bunny rabbits. And you get 40 experience for killing one in one hit with an animal. So, you know, if you're going from point A to point B and there's a boar on your path, like you better believe you should run that sucker over.
Yeah.
Gotta level up, dude. Gotta do the grind. Gotta commit to it.
If the controller vibrates while you're riding around on a mechanical T-Rex, is that called ye-hoptic feedback?
I'm sorry, Cole, I can't.
Sure, okay, that's fine. I feel like I was really light on those this week, so it's, yeah. Well, just continue. Pretend it never happened.
I mean the world still is cool, like a lot of the environments are really cool, the robots are cool, but that's just like about it. Like the story is not that interesting. I did just get to a narrative that kind of might be explaining more about the like the culture and kind of what happened before, so I still need to finish that out before I can say more about it.
Is it in the really tall tower?
Possibly. It's in the corner of the map.
Okay. You and I, top left corner?
Yeah.
Okay. I think you and I might be right at the same place in the game then, because I just got a big narrative dump that went into, I said on previous episodes, like I was really impressed and it felt refreshing that they had this crazy interesting world and that wasn't the focus of the story. And then it was like, well, no, let's give you a bunch of narrative information about, and they're still only hinting at it, but like what happened. If they were going to do it, I think they did it well. I would have rather have seen them just not answer those questions. But that's more personal preference than I think objectively good or bad.
Sure. I think I'll continue playing it still, just kind of see it through a little bit more. There's still parts of the world I haven't explored yet. Dennis, I think you're probably at a higher level than I am. I think I'm at maybe 18 or so, 18 or 19.
Oh yeah, I'm like 25 plus.
Okay. And so that's kind of like a problem too, because like there's a couple different areas that I've tried to go to. Like I found, like I think they're pretty good about, they show you where like the second one of those buildings are that you can go in to try and turn, figure out how to use your, what's it called? Yeah. So I found like the secret entrance to that or whatever. But then like the thing in there is like way overpowered for my level, even though I think it's like supposed to be like they claim that that building is like an 18 or 19 or something like that. But but like I'm way outmatched with that. I tried that a few times and just got nowhere close to defeating that monster. The other thing I was kind of saddened by is like one of the weapons they give you are traps. And I found out that there is a hard limit for how many traps you can put on a map. Once you get to about to like 9 or 10 or so, they start taking away the original ones that you put down.
Did they put them back in your inventory, or are they just gone?
I think they're just gone. Because I mean this
game has like I don't know hundreds of things on screen at once. Like, how can traps be that problematic?
Yeah, I know. I was definitely disappointed by it because I was But at the same time, I was trying to cheese like this giant monster where they show you this giant monster, but you have to trigger it, you know, coming out of its cage or whatever. So I was just setting up all these, you know, tripwires all around to try and use that as a way to kill him because since I was outmatched. But anyway, that was kind of disappointing that they took this away. But anyway, I'll probably still grind up and try and beat more of the game and like see more of the world. We'll see if I follow it through to the very, very end. But yeah, still. Bittersweet, I think.
Have you played around with photo mode at all?
No, not at all. I did not even know there was a photo mode in the game.
Oh my god, I'm about you. You're gonna have so much fun.
Is it through the menu? Is it?
Yeah, you pause the game at any point with like the start button. Pause the game, and photo mode is just one of the options.
Gotcha.
You can change like the scene freezes and then you can like rotate the camera and move the camera within the scene in a pretty wide radius around Aloy. And then you can change everything from like the time of day to the filter on it to like the camera angle, kind of like the roll, I guess, of the camera. Mm-hmm. It's got like depth of field and f-stop values. I think it's f-stop values. Yeah, anyone who knows photography. Okay, good. Yeah. So there's like really detailed controls in there to get the shot that you want.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's nice.
That's my trap. I'll play it until midnight and be like, all right, I should really go to bed. And then be like, well, maybe I'll just do one photo and then an hour later, I'm still
remembering the occasion.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that, I mean, that sounds cool. It's definitely playing to the strength of the game where, you know, like the world is very cool looking. So that's all I have on that. Do you guys have any questions on that?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So segueing into a game that I did see through to the end, I ended up beating Antechamber this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty great. Game is pretty awesome. I can't think of another game that's similar to that game. So it's cool to see a game that's that unique. Overall, the puzzle elements are good. They're not, like, great. Because it's like a lot of them are very tricksy and maybe not well scaffolded. But I mean, that said, it still is a really fun game. It's definitely mind-bending. It's a game that's far more creative than I would ever be able to do something like that. You walk into any room and like more thought has been put in that room than, you know, like anything you could come up with in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So it's amazing that they were able to squeeze that many like original ideas into a single game. So that I definitely appreciated that. I had fun playing around. Basically there's defined places where your abilities will expand and you can do something new. And so it's fun seeing that evolve. And the control system is pretty simple as well. It's like you're only using, I think, 3 buttons on your mouse, and that controls like all the different functions that you can do. So it's very compact. Yeah, so that was a very enjoyable experience playing through and beating that game. I don't know how much to say about that. Cole, you've played this game, right?
Yeah, so when you say beaten it, you got credits to roll, or did you do all of the, did you fill in all the squares?
I got credits to roll. I will have to go back and see if I filled in all the squares or not. I don't really care enough to fill in all the squares.
That's the thing. That's where I got to. I got a lot of them. Yeah, you know, you get a lot of them over the course of finding the key, like different gun modifiers that you need to affect the world in the correct ways to get credits to roll. But yeah, it strikes me as one of those things. I don't know this for sure. It seems like the kind of game that would make one of them inaccessible just to fuck with you.
Or just very like esoteric the way that you would get it.
That sounds like I have a negative opinion of the game, and I don't. I think that it's, you know, like you said, it's unique. There's very little that is like it in the world, and so like go for it, play it. But like being completionist about it does not seem like a fruitful way to approach it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one thing that I found interesting, or one thing that I noticed while playing it this weekend, is so what you can do is if you shoot cubes, if you mark an area with cubes or whatever, and then you walk around like a hallway, kind of like an impossible hallway where it's like you walk around three corners and you're facing something completely different, or mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about? If you have cubes on the wall, you can track when they switch out the areas.
Oh, yeah.
Which is something that I hadn't noticed before. So that was interesting to kind of understand how they were programming those types of impossible environments. So that was definitely fun. I definitely really like that game. I don't think it's going to be a game that I remember in like 20 years from now or something, but I mm-hmm. definitely think it's like a solid like golden nugget, you know, like it's definitely a cool bite-sized game. One more thing I got, if you guys are cool with moving on.
Yeah, I'm
go
good. Go.
The last thing I got is on Friday this last weekend, I streamed a little bit of a Portal 2 map. So one of my coworkers made a Portal 2 puzzle. And for fun, what he does is he tries to get people to solve it, and he just watches them solve it. He doesn't he doesn't give them any hints, and he'll talk to them about like whatever they want to talk about or whatever. But he like, and then he uses that information to try and refine it and make it a little bit better. So I played it for maybe
he's
about
like you.
I am very much a guinea pig in this. So I played this for about 3 hours or so, and maybe only got a fourth of the way through a puzzle. It's it's all done through the Portal like puzzle maker thing that they have bundled with the Portal 2 game. So that was interesting. But the cool thing about it is that was the first time that I was able to use OBS, and so I streamed from my computer. I streamed it on my Twitch account, so that was like a big step for me. So that was definitely enjoyable to do that. Yeah, and I even like talked in the microphone and stuff, which I typically don't do my stream. So I was trying to be a professional streamer for once.
Was that a good experience?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The only downside was part of the reason why I did this, my coworker typically will stream on the weekends too, and so like he'll have a group of people who watch. So he was streaming my playthrough through his channel as well. So like. So the only downside was the people who were watching on that had about maybe like a 30-second delay or so.
Okay.
So there's just like a little bit of time between feedback of when someone would write something and when we could respond to it. So that was kind of like the only annoyance. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely fun to get to the point of the puzzle where I got about a fourth of the way through, you get to what's called the death room, where there's a bunch of turrets and there's one spot that you can portal into this room at, but
that's not the safe spot.
It leads to pretty instant death. Yeah. There's probably something that I'm missing for how to get through that room.
Yeah.
But the first fourth of the puzzle was really cool and well designed. And it makes it in such a way that when you solve the first part, it opens a door to get into the second part, but it's reliant on you having two portals open. So as soon as you start shooting portals in the next room, it will automatically close behind you, and it like automatically barricades you into the next part, and you have to keep going forward. So a lot of cool design choices in the game. So yeah. I've been impressed by that part of it.
I love antagonistic level design. Back around the time when Mario Maker came out, it was really fun to watch. Griffin McElroy and what's his name from Giant Bomb, Dan Reichert, I believe. They were exchanging just impossible Mario Maker levels back and forth with each other, and just watching them try and beat each other's shit was incredibly fun. And it sounds like this is a person who tried to do you violence, but actually didn't end up breaking you. It sounds like you have a pretty positive estimation of it.
Yeah, it was fun so far. You're allowed to also drink beers while you solve it too, so that makes it easier. You don't really get as frustrated. I was able to break his level once with or being able to like cheat around something, but then like he later remembered that he had already made a patch for that in a different version of the map, where he had found that out before, so it was kind of like a fake break. But yeah, I think so. I'll probably play that again. Maybe I don't know if I'll play it this weekend, but maybe the next weekend. So that's something I look forward to doing again. And yeah, and I definitely like streaming too. So I thought that was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yay. But
yeah.
That's awesome to hear.
Only other thing I got is Rocket League. Same old, same old.
Of course.
Still fun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Gosh, why are so many good games out? This is such a weird March.
Yeah, it is.
Or weird April. I don't know. Weird Q1, let's say. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like everything. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the level number 191. We really appreciate it. If you want to make me happy and you're in the upper Midwest, come out to the Midwest Gaming Classic. Gary and I will be tabling the entire weekend for Watch Out for Fireballs, and we have that live show on Sunday afternoon. It'll be a good time. We would love to see you. Ben Jolly, you've been at these things, you know, is it a good time?
Yeah,
it is a good time.
Yeah.
There's tables to be flipped.
Yeah, please don't flip my table. It'll have lots of expensive stuff on it.
Yeah, just that bring a disinfectant wipe for the VR systems.
Well, what's that you said, Ben?
So just bring a disinfectant wipe for the VR systems that they have there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, just sure. Just get one of those. You remember when you were in middle school and there were fundraisers and it's like, oh, the top prize, you get to spend 30 seconds of the money in the money room, and they blew the money around. It's like that, but with Purell. for this show, we would really appreciate if you told your friends. That really does help us out. We don't advertise the show except by mentioning it on other shows on the network. Word of mouth is how we live and die. We also have the Patreon, which is a tremendous help in addition to that. And just general iTunes ratings, reviews. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm Jalachan in places.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles.
Yes, indeed. I realize, Ben, I haven't checked for your Twitter in a while. I don't know if I'm missing something new.
Did you twit?
That makes two of us.
No, just your November 9th.
Yeah.
I think that tweet has stood the test of time.
Hey, yep. No, it is as true today as it's ever been. November 9th. What happened? Right around then. Yeah. So I didn't write anything down, so I'm relying on you all.
Oh no, I don't have my phone on me.
Okay, so I'll fire some off.
Okay.
Werewolf and Left Eye.
Okay.
Grand Theft Emo.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ironically Dumb as Hell.
Okay.
I totally spaced out on your, or I totally spaced on your family, dude.
What's that from?
Talking about Papers, Please.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Peon Masters. And finally, whatever you're into, Cole.
Okay. Ben, did you have anything?
I had Breath of the Wild Fresh Air.
Yeah, I wanted to have something about the Breath of Fresh Air as well.
Okay, there we go.
You said it was a Breath of Fresh Air, and I wanted to say, like, interject something, but I couldn't come up with anything good.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Yeah.
I like
so
Peon
it just
Masters.
Passed.
Yeah, Peon Masters is pretty good.
Okay. Peon Masters, let's do it.
Okay, there we are.
How many E's is that going to have, Cole?
Just one. Right. I'm going to hope that people sound it out. And it'll if they don't sound it out, it'll sound innocuous until they get to that part of the episode.
I would just say this is the internet. People don't need that much help to get there.